This is Remote Ruby.
Have you any remote idea to the meaning of the word?
Welcome back, Andrew. We're missing Jason this week.
We are. We didn't record with Jason the week before last, which is the episode that actually released today. And I listened to it. It came out pretty good. We did pretty well without Jason, considering the first time.
His house went on the market yesterday, and he's already had like 7 showings scheduled for today. So we're going to give him the break and let him sell his house in like 48 hours. I think that'd be just fine.
I'm looking at 36. I've got my money staked.
Oh, nice. Yeah, you can win some of the earnings then, right?
Yeah. I told Jason I want some of the cost.
You're just like, well, they're already taking 6% fees to sell it. So what's another percent, right?
Yeah, or I mean, maybe 2.
Yeah. You know. God, those fees are crazy. You wouldn't think that selling your house would cost so much money, but it does. It's crazy.
Yeah. Well, it's not a problem I currently have, but maybe in the future, I'm sure I'll be lamenting about it.
Yeah. It's kind of a good problem to have, huh?
Yeah, so, I guess so.
So yeah, this week, filling Jason's shoes is our good friend, Steve Polito. He's back. And I mean, Steve, you can give us an update on like where you were last time when we talked to you on the show and then where you're at now. I think, quite a lot has changed, huh?
Yeah, yeah. So I want to start off by first saying thanks for having me back on the show because it's a huge deal for me. So this is pretty cool. But yeah, so where we last left off was I was working at a small agency and I was doing mostly WordPress stuff, mostly just marketing sites. But like my real passion was building web apps and I would do a lot of Rails stuff on the side. But I didn't have any real professional experience. So I was kind of caught in this space where I knew I wanted to change my career and start doing Rails work, but I didn't have the real world experience. I had side projects, but I applied to places and also just by having you guys let me on the show the first time, that kind of helped just like get my name out there. That plus being a part of the Go Rails community, that was a big help too. And Chris, you had actually in the Slack channel for Go Rails, you had just dropped in a link for a position at an agency called Impact. And I remember like seeing that and I even like replied to it in a thread and I'm like, I'll give this a shot. And it wasn't like you sent it just to me too. It was like you dropped it in the group. And I didn't really think much of it because I was applying to a lot of places at the time. But then they reached back out to me, which was obviously super exciting. And after kind of like an initial screening, I moved forward with the interview process. And then I got to a point where it was time to like do an assignment. And this is where like I've made it to this point in like several interviews, but never made it past that point. So a few examples of other interviews that I've done in the past were one was just like a lot of like problem solving, like puzzles. I remember one I had to do was like figuring out how to like, it had something to do with like flipping coins or something. I don't know, did terrible with it. Another thing was like figuring out like how to like move people across a raft over a river. It was all like very fictitious problem solving things. And like, I know I'm assuming like the point of those exercises was for the person interviewing me to like see how I think and whatnot. But obviously I'm biased because I didn't get those jobs. So I didn't think they were like particularly good ways to see if someone is qualified for like being a Rails developer. So what was great about this interview process was I was just given a copy of the production application and I was just asked to add a new feature to it, which I thought was really cool because it was like, all right, this is like literally what I'm going to be doing at work. This is the actual application. It's Rails. I know Rails. Like if I don't get the job, it's because, you know, I didn't understand Rails well enough or something like that. It wasn't because I didn't know how to like solve like an abstract puzzle that doesn't really relate to what I'll be doing day to day. So fortunately, you know, that part of the interview went well. What I ended up doing was just doing a drag and drop sort, which Chris, you like actually indirectly really helped me with that because you like just by chance posted like the stimulus episode on that, I think. So I was like, this is a perfect use case for this. So I just used that, but I was like able to put my own spin on it too. Like I didn't just straight up copy what you had done. And I was able to like walk through what I did and why I did it. And that was like really encouraging for me because I thought like, even if I don't get the job, this is a really good experience for me because I got to break through and like have like what I felt to be a good interview. But yeah, fortunately it worked out and now I'm working at Impact. I'm happy to say pretty much all of it is thanks to you guys. So really appreciate it. Thank you.
Dude, that's so awesome. We're excited for you.
Yeah. And it's definitely, we may have helped you get your name out there, but you're the one that put in the work and put in the hours to learn. So I think don't take away from yourself because that was all you.
Thanks. I appreciate that. And I should give a shout out to Dushan if you're listening, because he listens to the podcast and he reached out to me and he was just like, hey, like, I don't know a whole lot about Rails, but I do know about some of the skills that you're lacking. I'd mentioned those in the previous episode you had me on, and that was like kind of like more of the soft skill stuff. Like I had never written a PR before. Like I didn't really use GitHub other than just holding my repository, but I wasn't like using it for everything that it does. So I knew that those were things that were probably going to hold me back in getting a job, or at the very least, those are going to be very important skills to have when I get a job coding. So he helped me out a lot with that. Like he took time out of his day to just like show me how to do these things, how to make a PR, and not only showing me how to do it, but like explaining like why it's good to do that. And he in continuous integration too. So like he got me to think about that whole aspect of programming, which, and you guys can probably speak to this too, but that's like a huge part of programming. It's like, you know, knowing how to use GitHub, making PRs, collaborating asynchronously with your coworkers, like those are all really important skills to have. Because if you just know how to program, but you don't have those other skills, it's probably going to be really difficult.
I feel like, I know we always joke being in startups and small businesses, like how slow big companies go. But like when it comes down to it, most of the work in a big company is communicating between, you know, hundreds and thousands of people sometimes. And like, that is something you take for granted when you're learning to code and getting into it, because you're like worried about trying to make something work, period. Mm-hmm. And then like the reality is at a certain point, yeah, that's assumed you're able to do that, but to actually like work with everybody else on the team and designers and, you know, the legal team for your GDPR stuff and whatever, like it's a massive your programming stuff ends up touching every aspect of the business in some way, one or another, you know. So yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Like that is a thing, it's kind of easy to take for granted as you're learning. And like something like Git, you use it just to store your code for safety at first, but like you don't know why you need to use it or why teams find it so valuable. And then over time, you're like, oh, okay, makes sense. And, you know, it's also another good thing that like you might use it a little bit to explore different ideas at the same time with branches. But like until you're like, okay, we need to hotfix something in production. How do we do that? And we've got, you know, I'm in the middle of this feature, but I got to go jump onto something else. And it starts to really show its value. But you're right. Like it's really hard to like practice that stuff until you've done it, you know, in a real job. It's not something you can like simulate, which is probably part of the reason why a lot of the academic questions in job interviews feel strange, because you're like, that's not how the real work is. So why are you asking me these things?
Yeah, exactly. And I want to definitely like give a shout out to Morgan, he's the director of product at Impact. So he's the one that hired me, and you know, I work with him daily. Like he was instrumental in like outlining the interview process too, and even like the job description. I really appreciated how he crafted that, because there was a section in the job description that said this job may not be for you if, and like it listed like reasons, which all like really resonated with me. Like basically it said like, this job may not be for you if like you crave working on bleeding edge technology and like GraphQL or like React, things like that. And that's not to say those are like bad technologies, but like he was just making it very clear, like this position is for someone that knows Rails and like the Rails ecosystem really well. And like, we're going to really try to just stick with that. And that's what we're doing. So I can talk a little bit about the stack too, because right now we're just using Jumpstart Pro. So shout out. Thanks for that. So Jumpstart Pro, Tailwind, we got Honey Badger, and that's like more or less it. And then like we use Stimulus and Alpine, and we just started using Cable Ready, which has been really cool. And like with those tools, we can get so much done. Because right now it's myself. We just hired another developer and we have Morgan. So we have three full-time developers. And like with that seemingly, boring stack, we can do so much. And that was really highlighted in the job description, which I really appreciated.
And it's interesting, like at an agency, you have to build things quickly. So like that amount of work and different, you're probably working on lots of different projects, or the company is at least, and you need to be able to spin stuff up quickly. And, you can't spend a whole lot of time like, oh, let's learn React for this project, because it's going to take you time to learn it, to be able to build the first version, but really badly. Then you've learned all the ways that you should have done it. And then you're left with like messy code and you just can't, you can't maintain projects well like that at an agency pace, because you're just doing so many different things. It's kind of interesting. It's a great place to learn, I feel like, because you end up like being thrown into the fire on so many different projects.
Yeah. And I should say it's just one product that we're working on. But so Impact is like a HubSpot partner, HubSpot agency, but Impact Plus is the application that we're building. And it's an online community that helps sales and marketing teams grow revenue and advance in their careers. So it basically right now, like it's sort of like there's a lot of online training videos in there. So in some ways it's like similar to GoRails, like there's courses and lessons, but then there's also this whole other section that I've been working on called the business tools. And it's where you like rank yourself on certain aspects. And those aspects are like what Impact feels are important for their clients. It's like just a set of like skills that are important for growing your business. So I was tasked with sort of like building out this, what I thought to be like the most complicated thing I had ever been asked to do. So it was like a good way to like get over my imposter syndrome. So like when I first started, Morgan showed me like a Figma layout for this. It's called the scorecard page. And basically it's just, there's like a graph on it and there's 10 things that you can score yourself on. So like on the whole, it's like, sounds like it's fairly easy, but what made it complicated, at least for me at first, because I hadn't done all of this at once before, was users can log in and they can score themselves on these particular things on a scale of 0 to 10, but they're doing it in a modal. So like they click a thing that they want to score themselves on, a modal pops up. Within the modal is 0 to 10. They can click on, 0 to 10, and then there's no like submit button, right? So now it's like, okay, well this has to happen like asynchronously. Like, is this going to be a JavaScript thing? Is this going to be Cable Ready? Like, this is already like a little more complicated than just a regular form. And then, when they click it, they should be able to asynchronously submit it, but there should be some indication that like, yes, you click the button, we're processing your data. And then the modal, we wanted it so the modal wouldn't like just disappear. Like you could then select another thing to score yourself on while the modal still persists. And then while you're doing all that in the background, like when you update your score, like the chart also updates in real time asynchronously. And we got all that sorted out with like Cable Ready. But I just remember like basically at first, like my first week, I was like, man, like how am I going to make this? Like I've never done anything this complicated before. Like I've done individual pieces of this thing throughout my career, but I've never had to like do it all at once. And we had like a deadline too to meet. So it was even more real. But, you know, I got a lot of support from Morgan and like the team, which was great. But it was just like a really good way to kind of get over my imposter syndrome and realize like I can do a lot, you know, if I just set the time to do it.
Yeah, that is, you know, a thing that you have to build your own confidence in it, you know? Like there's a point where you'll probably get to where you're like, well, I feel like I can build any web app that someone would give me where, you know, it may take me 6 months or a year or something, but like I can figure it out, you know? And that's like a great feeling to get to that point, but it takes a lot of these, you know, projects and like challenges to get to that point where you've like done enough stuff and tried enough things that you're like, okay, I feel confident finally. And sometimes you like feel that way for a little bit and then it goes away and you're like, well, this sucks. Like I thought I knew what I was doing, but I don't. There's just too much to learn.
Yeah. And for anyone listening, that's like, because I feel like I represent like a big part of the dev community in the sense that I'm like, for context, like I didn't go to school for this. I went to school for graphic design and I kind of learned this stuff on the way over like the course of years. But when I first started doing web development, it was like I was doing stuff in Dreamweaver. I was designing with HTML tables and like I just knew enough to like get something on a page. And then from there, I like learned a little bit about WordPress and I like figured out how to do things on WordPress and Drupal. But if you were to ask me to do them like from scratch, I would have no idea where to start. But now, like I just described that scorecard page, like I feel like myself, like even like a year ago, would have had no idea how to do that. So all that is to say that like if you're someone that sounds like me where you're like you know enough but you have that imposter syndrome where you haven't had the chance to do something super complicated, I would say that just given enough time and practice, you'll be able to figure it out, because like I'm not that smart. I think what helps me figure things out is I just try to break things down into the smallest, simplest piece. You know, break things into small pieces and just like kind of build upon it from there. That and just like knowing when to reach out for help. And like obviously like the Go Rails community is super helpful. You know, I can go in like the Slack channel and like chances are someone could like help me out, even if it's just like them posting like a link in there to something, like a resource. But yeah, I mean I wanted to like encourage people to like, if anyone's listening, like, and they think like, oh, I probably shouldn't apply for this job. I don't have enough experience, or, you know, I don't think I could ever do that. Like, I'm telling you, you can, because I did. It took some time, but I mean, I did it, and there's nothing really that special about me other than I just took the time to learn these things slowly.
Yeah, I feel the same way. It's just like I put in a lot of time. Like, I don't feel like I'm particularly, you know, smart or anything at all. Like I've done, you know, this stuff for way too many hours. and it feels that way. I feel like, you know, when you see someone who's like really good, they just probably put in a lot of time. But
yeah,
Andrew, you disagree?
No, I think Chris is a genius, honestly. Sometimes I just look at his work and I'm like, God, there's something. The aliens dropped him off or something. But I agree. The showing up and doing the work is definitely going to get you very, very far. And kind of like what you were saying, I was talking to my mentor the other day. He made a point that he views a mid-level developer as someone who you can give a problem to and they can figure out how to solve it. And a senior programmer is someone who's already solved it several times and they can pick the method of solving it that is going to work best in that scenario. So something to think about. But yeah, I think it's, I've seen a lot of developers looking for jobs and it's great to hear that there are some of them out there who are finding them, especially people who are coming into like new Rails organizations. So I think it's awesome to hear. I know Chris and Jason and I were really excited when we heard that you got hired. So yeah, it's, congrats to you. I think you earned it, dude. You came up, you showed up, you put in the hours, and it's you're reaping the reward.
Thank you. Yeah, appreciate that. But yeah, I mean, like I said, I mean, I feel like I just represent like that group of developers that just have like ongoing chronic imposter syndrome. But like you can definitely get over it, and like you can start. You can get over it, and you can definitely do more than you think you can. It just takes time. And like some of the soft skills that I've learned that I think are probably helpful for other people out there either looking for work or looking to improve their workflow. So like right now, so before this, I hadn't done any GitHub, like I said, and now I'm like heavily using it. So like anytime I need to do anything on the project I'm working on, the first thing I do is I just open up an issue, but I make sure to open up the issue and make it like bite size. So like, I'm not going to open up an issue that's like build phase two of application or something. Like it's not going to be this giant thing. It'll be like, you know, build this model. And then what I've found that's been kind of helpful for me and our team is like in that issue, I'll go in and like write out some pseudocode for how I think that particular model or controller or whatever it is should be built. And I feel like that's sort of like kind of an effective way to do it, at least for me right now, because that way you're not like, it feels like if you could like throw it away, it's not like you're that committed to it. Whereas like if you start coding on it and then like you get like an hour down and you're like, yeah, this isn't great. You know, not that that's a bad thing, but I feel like just in the issue itself, just like kind of outlining how I think it should work has been helpful for us. And then just like, we also use like the projects feature of GitHub a lot. So like the Kanban board style thing where like something's either like in progress or to do or it's done, and like linking all those things up with PRs and everything. That's been something we've kind of relied on a lot in the past couple months. And I think that's helped like with our organization and staying on task with things. But like I said, like that was a skill I didn't have like a couple months ago. And I started pairing with someone named Dushan, and he had taught me that. And then also on my personal projects, I just started doing that for practice. So like if you're listening and you like don't have anyone to pair with, but you at the very least have like a side project, like open up issues in GitHub for your side project and then like link those to PRs and everything. It's like good muscle memory, I found. Even if like it's kind of overkill if it's just you working on the project, I think it's really good muscle memory for like when you're actually going to have to work with people. And it's also, it's a good way to like keep a good organized like paper trail of your project too over time, I've found.
I agree. I always, the way I work on like my side projects, even like my personal website or just like a demo I'm building or really anything on GitHub that I push up, I pretend it's like a real project that people are going to contribute on or collaborate on, because you're right. It's definitely good practice, and just kind of continuing to hammer out that workflow is nice. And it also like helps me, because it helps me find like better ways of doing things over time. Like you said, you mentioned the GitHub projects thing. I haven't used it a lot, but I know friends who have. And at one point we were building like this changelog tool so that anytime the app was deployed, it would take all the closed like project IDs that we were putting in the commit messages, and it would like create like a really nice changelog from that. So just like using GitHub like on all your stuff is, or kind of like a GitHub pattern or flow is great for finding like ways to improve like the things you do every day and just help you get better using GitHub in general or GitLab or whatever Bitbucket you choose to use. But I don't think the tool matters as much as like building the patterns and kind of the workflow.
Yeah, I agree with that. That's really where GoRail started, because at one point like I was just documenting stuff on my personal blog and decided to like organize it. But that was like practice for, you know, just document what you're doing. Cause worst case, if you like give up on that project for a little while and come back 6 months later, you'll be able to jump right in immediately because you've documented everything. And that's just a good, you know, practice for what real, you know, full-time software developer work is like, you know, being able to communicate that to the future version of you is a good excuse to do it on your own projects. If you struggle with like, why would I do that extra work if I'm never going to read the wiki or whatever? And do it for yourself. And then that'll feel maybe a bit more of, you know, a good reason to do it in practice or whatever. Cause I think it's one of the hardest things to build stuff on your own and, you know, try and practice what being a real developer would be like. Cause that's what people want to hire for. They want you to have real experience, but how do you get it? You know, you got to pretend that you're a real developer working with other people a little bit, and it feels strange, but like it really does help.
Yeah. And Chris, I should say, like, you actually helped, you were great in mentoring me with my first PR ever. So like that was, I did that because for two reasons. One, I thought it'd be really cool to get a PR into Jumpstart. And also because I was like, I don't really have much experience with this at all. And like, and when I mean experience, I mean like, I didn't even like know what I was supposed to click when I went to GitHub, like for doing PRs and stuff. Like I was like, I've heard PR said like 1,000 times. I've heard fork my repo. I've heard all these things, but I really don't know how to do them. And if I want to actually be a Rails developer, I need to figure this out. So what I did was I looked at the open issues for Jumpstart, and there was like an enhancement. Like one was tagged like, this would be a nice thing for someone to do. And I'm like, all right, cool. Like, what's the worst that could happen? Like, you know, let's give it a shot. And it was, for context, it was to add the ability for a user to change their gravatar on Jumpstart. So that's, for anyone listening,
yeah,
that was like the context.
Yeah, it was like before then, I think it was just, it would use a gravatar all the time or whatever. And then you have the ability to upload through active storage now a different avatar. So at least you have the, you know, gravatar is your default, but you can always override that and, you know, use whatever you choose instead. So that was a good first PR, because it was one that like, it's open ended enough for you to go down your path and build it the way you imagine it. And then when you submit it to me, like I went through and was like, here's some things I would change, and like maybe we can simplify this or whatever. And we did that back and forth where it was like, oh, interesting. Like I can see the path you're taking. You can see now what I'm imagining, and they're very similar, but like the nuances are the things that are the hard details to get for us to align. You know, a lot, that's probably one of the biggest parts of building good software, is like your designer can like mock up a PSD of a website, but then if you go build it and it doesn't function the same way they envisioned it functioning, even though it was static, you know, you realize, wow, there's a lot more to getting this to match, you know, what people envision. And so it's interesting, and it's good practice too to do the opposite thing, you know, like maybe you can build some open source thing and have some other person, you know, contribute the code and you review it and kind of learn how do you write out those things so that you fully describe as best you can what you're really looking for, so you don't forget to mention some crucial piece that they go and do a bunch of work on, and then, you know, they come back and you're like, we need to rewrite that, but you're on the right track. It's interesting to see that, you know, from both angles, I feel like.
Yeah, that was really helpful. Like, you were very helpful too with the comments you gave me in the PR. So, I mean, like, honestly, for anyone listening, like, I was really intimidated to make a PR. So, like, I'm trying to, if anyone's listening and just wants to practice making a PR, like, just go to my GitHub and just, like, PR. Like, you can update the README or something if you want. Like, because it's really just good practice. Like, once you do it a few times, you like kind of get the muscle memory for it. Like at least like what to do, like what button to click, like how does this work type of thing. Cause that's going to be like crucial to like your day-to-day job. Cause it is for me now. And it's also helpful for getting your, like reading someone else's code too. Like that's like a really undervalued skill, or I shouldn't say undervalued skill. It's just a skill that like could be overlooked when you're trying to promote yourself or like, you know, get a job. Like, cause half the day you're looking at code someone else wrote with like very little context.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's one of those things that when someone new joins a team, like one of the best things they can do is go fix or improve all the documentation on stuff, or like maybe refactor a little a bit of things, because they get to understand like the intentions of it from a very fresh standpoint, which is really interesting. Because then you're like, wow, we have so much knowledge in these weird email threads or people's brains because they just had a conversation in person, you know, in a meeting or something and never wrote it down. And then it appears in the code at some point and you're like, why is that? And, you know, there's so many of those moments that you should document, but it's really, do you do it in the code? Do you do it in GitHub or Basecamp or the Git commits or, you know, like it can get so weird over time. And then those are the things that like, there's so many projects I've worked on that are like, yeah, we can't change that because this one person depends on this like bug, you know, like they expect it to work incorrectly. And you're like, well, shoot, like how do we fix it, but not break that thing they need? And it's just weird. And those are like sometimes showstoppers because someone will be like, no, you can't change it, which means you can't clean up your technical debt. And then you're just stuck with this nasty mess. And like, that's the last thing any developer or really a business should want, you know, because that's slowing them down and costing money and whatever. But yeah, I feel like reading other people's code is really interesting. Have you had moments in there that are like, I have no idea what this code does? And like, do you feel lost looking at some of this stuff? Or have they been pretty good about, you will feel lost, but just come ask us and we'll walk you through it or whatever?
Yeah, good question. Well, for context, this is like a pretty new application, which is, yeah. So, and it's also like, it's cool because like me and the other developers, like we have like kind of a lot of flexibility right now because like we're building new features. But that being said, like there's already a good amount of surface area on the app. Like there's other features that I haven't touched. I don't know much about them, but we try to stay as close to the Rails way as possible. So even if I don't know the context of something, I can at least reverse engineer like what it's doing at a very high level. So I'm like, okay, well, it looks like this method is like adding something to the database, or this method is like iterating over something. I can always reach out to Morgan or anyone else when I actually am like, I don't know what this is. Like, I don't want to break anything. I would say the things that I'm like unsure of are more like, I need to like sharpen my Ruby skills a bit. Cause there's times where I'm like, is this Rails or is this Ruby? Or is this like a gem? Like where did this method come from? Is this part of like Rails core? Is this part of a gem, or did we just like make this method somewhere? Like there's things like that. And you know, you kind of like try to chase it down. And I think actually Nate even tweeted about something like that, like today or something. It's like, you can spend like some time looking around for like the source of where some code or some method is. But on the whole, I'm not like super intimidated by that stuff, because I know like I can figure out where that comes from. My main concern would be like, okay, well, I just want to make sure whatever I'm working on over here doesn't have any negative effects on that thing over there.
I looked at some code in Jumpstart a couple of days ago and I was like, I don't know what this is doing. So, I mean, I don't know. It's like, to your point about like knowing Rails more than knowing Ruby, like, I mean, I'm in the same boat. And I said this either last week or the week before, like I bombed a Ruby interview. Like they gave me like a plain Ruby like interview like problem. They were like, all right, solve this. And I bombed it because I like I know Rails so much better than I know just straight up Ruby. And when I need to write Ruby, I need to like usually go check the docs again for some things anyway, or because I'm not writing that much plain Ruby. So I don't know. It's nothing to be ashamed about. I think you'd be surprised how many people fall into that category, but it is worth bringing up. Like, if you feel like you're in that boat, now may be a good time to start recognizing that and kind of trying to sharpen those Ruby skills, because they're only going to help you write better Rails code. So,
yeah, I had that. I know I've talked about it a bunch of times, but that first job where I was doing Rails full time-ish, I got in like 6 months and they were asking me to write breadcrumbs from database records. And like, I just straight up couldn't do it. And I was so embarrassed. And, you know, I felt horrible about it because I was like, how can I build all this other stuff in Rails, but I can't like do enough Ruby to take these database records and like convert it to nested unordered lists in HTML. And I was like, that seems really terrible. And I realized like, I don't really know Ruby that well. So that was when I realized like, you know, I got as far as I could just focusing on Rails itself. Now I need to go learn Ruby. And as long as you're just like, cool, this tells me I need to go learn whatever thing, and you're not just stuck with, you know, the feeling of embarrassment, you know, don't dwell on that too much. Just see it as a time where you need to go and do some extra work, go learn some new thing or whatever. Those are like, those feelings are moments to like dig in deeper almost instead of avoiding them.
Yeah. I totally agree. And what I also found is that I know I can write the Ruby to do like whatever the thing is, but it's not going to be good Ruby. And that was like the first thing that I realized when I was in the middle of bombing this code interview and running out of time. And I was like, all right, I'm running out of time. And to just solve the problem, I'm just going to like start writing like Ruby, like instead of focusing on like, oh, modules and classes and like the object orientation programming is so clean and Sandy Metz-esque. I was like, screw it. I at some point I interpolated like some name and just sent it. Like using send is such a powerful tool. But it, I don't know. Like you both kind of said, it's worth investing in if you feel like that may be something you should do.
Yeah. Yeah. And honestly, like in those cases, I'll do the like for an interview kind of question, I will go the, you know, one giant method that walks through everything and, you know, see if I can get that to work. And that is mostly me trying to take the process of how to solve the problem and just write it out. Cause then, you know, you can go extract that into methods, classes, modules, whatever, as you need to. But really, like, you need to solve the problem first before you can like clean it up and organize it, because then you see the concepts. Because most of the time when you're doing one of those, you know, things, they're giving you a challenge that you're going to have to take some time to wrap your head around. How does this even get solved? So, you know, those are things like, they do feel embarrassing when you're in an interview writing some like really gnarly code, but it's kind of like what they want to see, I think. They want to see, how do you make it work first and then extract it and clean it up and make it, you know, testable and reusable and whatever else, you know, and they'll see your thought process on solving things that way, which is, you know, it is an interesting thing. I think most of the time it seems like they really should more be testing, can you do this at all? Whether like, I don't know, it seems like it's very hard to give someone a problem and then like, unless you're pair programming on it, you can't see their complete thought process on it, you know? Like take home projects, you don't know what they're doing. And like at work, do you care? Unless you're pair programming with them? Seems kind of, you know, interesting. It's such a hard thing to do a good interview process. I think that's what we like to complain about it, but it's really hard to come up with a good interview process at the same time.
Yeah. And I just want to highlight that real quick, what you said, solve the problem first and then get fancy. Because I got fancy first. And that was my downfall. Cause I got too fancy and too far out of my like comfort zone. And then I ran out of time because I was like, solving issues on like the fringe of the things that I could remember off the top of my head. So yes, do what Chris said. Solve the problem first, then get fancy.
Yeah, that's I second that. And kind of going back to the whole Ruby thing too, one thing that I've found is another very helpful soft skill. I'm not even sure if it's really a soft skill, but just being able to like read the docs. Like, and when I say the docs, I mean like insert framework or language or whatever here. Because I can tell you like not even like probably 2 years ago, like when I was doing WordPress stuff and I like ran into an issue, I'd be like, well, I guess this isn't getting solved because I don't know how to do it without like this plugin. It was only until, like I said, like a few years ago that I started like really just going into the docs for whatever particular thing I was trying to work on. So like in that case, it'd be WordPress. And it does take time. Like that's why I'm saying like practice it, like practice going through documentation. That being said, I know that if like past Steve was hearing future Steve say that, he'd be like, well, yeah, but I'm not going to just like sit down, crack my knuckles and like open up like the WordPress API and read that because that's going to be so boring and like I don't have anything to do with that right now. So I can think of like a real world example where like reading the docs like was important for me and like I was actually incentivized to do it. So this was for a Ruby thing I was doing and I was trying to, it's for a personal project, but I use SimpleNote, which is just a note-taking platform. And for a personal project, I'm just making my own version of SimpleNote and like I'm basically reinventing the wheel, but it's like fun for me to do it. So it's like, I already know the idea like isn't novel, but I want to get all of my SimpleNote notes into my app. And I have like, I don't know, probably 1,000. And luckily SimpleNote lets you export the notes as individual text files. And I think a JSON file too. And I was like, oh, this would be like a cool way to make my first Ruby gem. Like it'd be fun to like just make something that parses this JSON object and then converts it into a CSV. So that was the problem I was trying to solve. SimpleNote doesn't let you export your notes as a CSV. It does let you export notes, but just not in that format. And kind of like what you guys are saying, where like start with just like solve the problem first and then like make it nice. Like, yeah, I think I had like a couple giant methods that just like did everything all in that one encapsulated method. So I did that at first, but then also I needed to like look at the docs. Like, and when I say docs, in this case, I mean like the actual Ruby API. And by having an actual project that I was incentivized to work on, like it really forced me to sit down, look at the docs and understand or try to understand what I was reading. And it's like, it was a very helpful and useful exercise because I came out of it one solving my problem, but also like understanding how to read documentation regardless of the framework or the language.
Yeah. Reading the docs is like something that is it is something that with practice you can get a lot better at. And then what I kind of find is as I progressed through my skill, like sometimes I would crack open the docs. And I would always give like, if I'm opening up a gem for the first time, like I'll always like read through the readme and everything I need might be there. But if it's not, like being comfortable with learning like the typical architecture and structure of certain things in Ruby, like the Ruby ecosystem, like a normal Rails app, a normal Ruby gem, you know, and figuring out like those patterns, it'll help you get really comfortable with like jumping into the lib folder of a gem and checking like what methods are available or checking like the thing that you need and what it returns and things like that. So I think it's like a natural progression. And yeah, like you're saying, with practice and perseverance, one day it will become a lot more second nature.
Yeah, completely agree. Cause I would say at this point, anytime that I have an error, I dive like I'll do a bundle info or bundle show and like open up the source code of the gem that I had the error with, because chances are I'm giving it something wrong. So I'll either look up the code on GitHub or just locally on my machine and read through it and see what it's doing, what it's expecting. And then I get to learn a little bit more about that library and what it expects and how it works internally. And that I can't count how many hours that saves, you know, because like at the end of the day, all of that source code is you're downloading that every time that you install a gem. So you have access to all of it. So you can read it and you should treat it like it's code inside your own app because it is. You just didn't write it, you know? So that I think is one of those things that like over time people end up spending more and more time on it. And it's really hard to wrap your head around at first. But like Andrew was saying, like every Ruby gem has a require which loads the main file for the gem, which then goes and says, hey, let's load these other things. And maybe we'll load a Rails engine. And then Rails will, as part of its boot up process, require the Rails engine and set it up. And, you know, you can go through, and as long as you have an idea of, you know, the Rails boot process, you can go through and figure out, like, this gem is loading too soon, too late, something's off there, and you can start poking at it. And just, you know, what's really fun is like, there's a lot of times where if I'm working on a bug that I can't quite tell, but it dies in Active Record or something weird, and I can't quite tell what's going on, I'll just open up the source code for Active Record and put a bybug inside of it in the gem, and then like wait until that happens, and then I can poke around and see like what does the internal state of Active Record look like, and it, you know, call the methods like it would, see where it's dying, what variables are, and you know all that, and it like, you know, it makes it feel like magic when you solve bugs by doing that stuff. It's pretty cool. So yeah, that seems to be one of the like superpowers, it feels like, that you pick up on over time as the developer. Cause at first you're like, I'm clueless. I don't have any idea how WordPress works or Rails or Laravel or anything. And you start to understand all these little details about it. And then it starts to make a lot more sense. And then at a point you're like, yeah, I can fix anything. It's not a problem. Like I'll eventually figure it out. But it does take a lot of time, and there's just a lot of concepts you have to understand to get to that point, but it's doable, you know? And you need to, like most things, just treat it as a challenge instead of like a scary thing. Even it'll be scary, but like imagine it as a challenge instead, and you can figure it out, or you can ask people to help pair with you and, you know, debug it. And that can help a lot too, because they might have some weird knowledge that you didn't, and you're like, oh, that's interesting. And they'll probably say it offhand because that's the nature of debugging, is like all this weird knowledge you have ends up being like, yeah, I saw that error once like 7 months ago, and I think we fixed it by doing this. And you're like, oh, okay. I never would have been able to Google for that. It's programming is a strange thing when it comes down to it. It's funny.
I learned so much stuff from Nate from exactly what you said. Like we'd be on a pairing call and he would just like, we would be working through like a problem and he would just be kind of muttering, oh yeah, well that's like a blah, 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 blah. And like, you know, you can do like blah, blah, blah with it. And I learned so much stuff from him just kind of like muttering like useful things throughout the entire process. So yeah.
That's awesome. Originally when I started GoRails, I wanted to do that and include that in the screencasts as like a, maybe an aside or something, like I could have, you know, like the core screencast. And then if I ran into a bug in the middle of it, it could be like a bonus section at the end. But I quickly realized like things get really incoherent pretty fast because I'm like,
yeah,
I saw this like 3 years ago in Rails 3 or something. And then, yep, here's the solution. And like to explain that would be such a tangent and be crazy. But It is a good one for pair programming, but when you can stop and be like, wait a minute, tell me more about that, doesn't quite work in video near as well as I wish.
Yeah, especially when it's knowledge that you're like, oh, I just know that for some reason you need to upgrade to Webpacker 5. Nate was having problems with that, requiring like images in a new Rails app the other day. And I was like, Nate, you need to upgrade to Webpacker 5. I was like, I don't really know why. It's like, I just know that that's the solution.
Yeah. And that's one that to me feels like that, where it's like, I don't totally know how it works behind the scenes, And there's a lot of those things where you're like, yeah, something they changed in version 5 fixes that. And I don't know, and I don't need to know why exactly, but you know, you could probably read through the changelog and figure it out if you needed to. But like, yeah, there's not enough time in the day to go through and figure out, you know, those details all the time. So it is weird, you know, like you understand some solutions at a very surface level. And then other times you like really understand like the exact nuances of why something breaks or whatever. It also gives you really good, you know, like Stripe's API is the most descriptive API errors ever. And like, I can't say how much I appreciate that. It's so nice. So it always makes me want to be able to write, you know, an API with that level of detail, but it takes a lot of people, a lot of time, but yeah, it's good stuff. Yeah. Anything else you guys want to touch on before we wrap up?
I just want to thank you guys again for having me on here, because it like this platform and the Go Rails community, like quite literally got me a job. So thank you for that. And for anyone listening, like I said, just start practicing, you know, those soft skills, practice reading documentation, give yourself a personal project that you're passionate enough about that it will get you out of your comfort zone and allow you to learn new things. And, you know, feel free to like reach out to me on GitHub or Twitter if you want to like practice any of these skills, because I'd love to, you know, give back. And also like what Chris was saying too, like document everything, because that's kind of what I did, but I just made those into blog posts. And every now and then someone will stumble upon it and they'll like write in, they're like, oh, hey, this was helpful. And something like that, at the very least, it's going to help you in your future self if you run into that problem again. But it will also help distinguish you from other candidates for a job, because you can always point to that.
Yeah, you may not have, you know, some impressive project you did, but you can be like, look, here's all the stuff I've done and documented it. And that's pretty rare. So that's a really good way to stand out. I think that's, you know, a really appreciated skill when you see that in a developer. They're like, wow, you know, this is what we need more on our internal apps and whatever. So it's really great to see that. And yeah, what's your username on Twitter and GitHub?
Everything is Steve Polito Design. So just search that.
Cool. You're going to have to change your username to Steve Polito Rails Developer.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, my design skills have kind of waned.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, that's a good thing, I guess, now that you're doing more Rails. So yeah, well, that's exciting, man. We're so happy for you. Like, it's when you told us, like, you got a job because of the podcast, we were all like, holy crap, like that's so cool. So yeah, I mean, it's like the reason why we like doing this, you know, seeing those things happen. And you know, it's always still mind-blowing to me when people reach out to us about the show or whatever. We're like, people actually listen? Like, we see download numbers, but you know, that is just a number on a screen, on a graph, not an interaction with a real person. So it's quite crazy. But yeah, well, unless you guys have anything else, I guess we'll talk next week.
It was good talking to you again, Steve. Good luck, man.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
All right. See ya.
All right, folks.